Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds.
All right, we are ready for our next discussion, which is about open networks, which is a transformative trend in the telecom industry, once a bold concept, now becoming reality. Or is it? We'll see. That the panel will decide. The open network movement is, for sure, reshaping not only how networks are built, but also how they operate. From technological complexities and standardization to economic benefits and everything in between, let's hear it from the panel that will be led by the returning moderator here at 5G Techtree. He is a telco technologist with an independent perspective on telecom advancements. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Mr. Timo Jokiaho. Welcome, Timo. The stage is yours.
Thank you, sir. So we are going to talk about open networks. And before I hand over to the great panelists, I'm going to make a short introduction, a few minutes only. You know, going a little bit back in time, not that little, 12 years to be exact, which means that this whole open network transformation started late 2012 by major service providers, like 15 of those, launching a white paper on network function virtualization, which is, of course, a long time ago. And many people in the industry, they consider that NFV was a failure. It was mainly used to virtualize 4G packet core, and people think it was a failure. We need to define what failure is. In my opinion, it was not a failure, because that has been an excellent learning journey for the industry to start utilizing horizontal architecture, disaggregated architecture, multi-vendor deployments, working together, trying to make things happen as an industry, not just a single companies. So it was a failure. It led us into 5G, it led us into Open RAN or O-RAN, it led us into start utilizing cloud technologies and all these things. I think it was a necessary thing to do. From business perspective, maybe it could have been better, but from technology development and telecom industry development, I think it was a good thing to do, not a failure. Now, what we need to, there's many things we need to do. So one thing we need to do, we still need to be better working together as an industry and integrating our components together. And we need to create more trust between the vendors, which is not easy, but I think that's a mandatory thing to do, to disclose some details of people's components so you can integrate them together, you can make interoperability happen, and all these things. Of course, there are business realities, and people do not want to disclose everything. That's understandable, and it's all okay. But there still needs to be more trust within the ecosystem. We are getting there, there's no doubt. It might have been slow, but we are getting there. Now, I'd like to point out one SDX Central article about 6 weeks ago, maybe. Its title was What's Keeping Telecom Operators from Adopting Open Networks, which is exactly what we are going to talk about today. The article itself, it's a good article. It has valid points, but there was one statement in the article which really upset me. I mean, really, really upset me, and I completely disagree. It even pissed, never mind, it upset me. And the statement was that it's very difficult for telecom operators or CSPs to go to open networks because they have 50, 60-year-old engineers who know only telco, and this is all about cloud. And I asked, what the hell was that? So I'm almost 70, and I think I know telco. But I have also worked on cloud technologies for last 10 years. I think I know cloud technologies as well. So I completely disagree on that statement. And I also disagree the latter part of the statement, which is this is all cloud cloud computing. That's worse. Now, on my opinion, telco networks are not clouds. It's not cloud. But it's what is one fundamentally important at the same time is that building telco networks, they need to be based on cloud technologies, like virtualization maybe, like containers, like cloud nativeness, using cloud operational practices. But telco network still is not cloud, on my opinion. So that statement was wrong, on my opinion. The other one, other stuff in that article interview was pretty much all good. So no more ranting, no more introduction anymore. So I'm going to turn over to my great panelists here, and I think we have a perfect lineup. We have a representation from operator industry, vendor industry, testing industry, and industry organization doing the integration work. So I think we are well represented from wide perspective. So I'm going to ask everybody to spend a few minutes and introduce yourself and your companies, and then we start talking about the real things. Gunnar, why don't you start?
So my name is Gunnar Danbergs. I am vice president and member of the management board in Latvian mobile telephone company, running various branches of business connected with IT. And one of them is mobile network running. We are operating four technologies, 2G, 3G, 4G, and 5G in 11 frequency bands so far, and our network is based on two main suppliers, Nokia and Ericsson mainly, of course, NEC, HP, and all other things as well. And what we are doing so far, of course, we are going to cloud native technology, introducing 5G standalone system, and release 17 of 3GPP. And finally, it's necessary to move to virtualization and cloud technologies. But so far in our conventional network, we are not using any Open RAN technology, but what we are looking for Open RAN and more precisely, maybe open core network we are delivering now. And we are looking for so private networks, special cases for enterprises and our big clients who need separate network and they don't like to be connected in all mobile network. Or they need separate network, and we are working on special elaborated cases for them. And I think there we see future for open core and open core technology. Yes.
Thank you. Slavomir.
My name is Slavomir Pietrzyk. I'm a CEO and founder at IS Wireless. IS Wireless is a provider of mobile networks and mobile technologies, pioneering in this Open RAN movement, but proudly differing from the others by the fact that we are the only ones focused on extremely, extremely efficient use of resources, the existing resources, such as spectrum computing. Because from engineering perspective, it's sort of easy to give extra performance at the cost of extra resources, more channels, more antennas, but it's more difficult to get more performance without asking for more resources. And we think that this is a very important paradigm shift into the future of the networks, and part of that is cloud, as Timo has mentioned. We are very strongly rooted also in research within the domain of 5G and currently 6G. And commercially, we are already quite, I would say, I wouldn't say satisfied, because you always want more, but we are fairly well doing, selling licenses and networks already in Europe, in the UK, in Germany, in Finland, in Poland. We are a Polish company, and we are growing into the region of Southeastern Asia that we see as a very promising one. So thank you.
Good.
Yes, so my name is Sanna Brandt, and I'm working for Roden Schwarz as a market segment manager for the infrastructure. So Roden Schwarz is a 90 years old company having over 10,000 people working worldwide, and we are providing the test and measurement solutions for based on this innovation for RF technology. And we are working for the latest technologies, so 5G advanced, AI, 6G, and so on. But one focus area why I'm here today as well, so we are working on this O-RAN market, providing the solutions together with Viavi. And we are offering this kind of ORU test, it's radio unit test solution for the market. And then we are very active, for example, participating the O-RAN Alliance, the standardization work, participating the plug fests and so on. So contributing also for this O-RAN market.
Hello, my name is Aleksi Helakari. I'm the head of technical office for Spirent Communications here in EMEA. Spirent Communications is a test and automation and assurance company, helping all the way from network equipment manufacturers to operators to end users to validate the networks and test them, make sure that they are performing as expected. So helping throughout the value chain, test and assure all things related to mobile networks.
Yeah, Andreas Gladisch, I'm the coordinator of I14Y. I14Y is an open lab that offers test and integration services, and we are a consortium, a publicly funded consortium, with three operators as partners, DT, Vodafone Germany, and Telefonica Germany, two system integrators, Capgemini and Nokia, three SMEs, BISDN, ENTC, and High Street Technologies, plus two academic partners, Technical University of Berlin and Heinrich Hertz Institute. So, and our goal is to develop the test infrastructure and to develop the test specifications and even the test itself to a level that it matters for the industry, that matters for the operators, and that they easily can take the test results and the certificates as an entry for their later integration or the later system integration. So we are proud to announce that we have already issued a couple of conformance tests, conformance certificates based on O-RAN. We also work with TIP, and we have issued one of the TIP badges to a setup with a RIC. And most importantly, we support the ecosystem in getting better with the test specifications.
Okay, thank you very much. So we have few different topics we want to talk about today. A little bit on deployments, which have been there, what industry needs to do to maybe accelerate the adoption and deployments. We will talk about technical challenges and how to mitigate the challenges or help industry to mitigate the challenges. We'll talk a little bit on financials. Is open network better than closed network from financial point of view? Then we talk about one of the newer industry effort, which is open network APIs. So we have those four main topics. We can talk otherwise other things as well if we have time, but those are the topics. So Sanna, you wanted to talk about government funding a little bit, so maybe you could start on that.
Yeah, so it's related to, I think, yeah. So in US, for example, so now, for example, 1 year ago, so there was also in my side, so okay, so if this O-RAN will fly or not, so there was very excited in the beginning when I started to work for O-RAN related topics, and then there was a little bit slowdown, so if this will fly or not. So, but if you have followed what's ongoing in US, so there's a ongoing a lot, so there was a lot of complaints also within US ecosystem, so why government doesn't support us at all, so, and there was even some companies get bankrupt because of this, so they didn't get money to develop their products. And then in US, so NTIA, so which is the government office, so they start to, okay, we need to do something. And last year, 1 year ago, so they first, the biggest problem was the testing. So everybody knows in O-RAN, so testing is very expensive, and this is how we can do the testing. And especially if you are developing the radio unit, so you are involving with the hardware, so you need to develop the hardware and then test it. But then also the integration, when you are integrating this full chain for end-to-end testing, so that's requiring a lot of work. And then maybe especially the maybe smaller companies, they don't have the money for that. So first funding was really focusing on this, building the test centers in the US, and there was over $140 million provided last year. And there is basically now there's three big centers now established in US. So there is Orchid Lab for the established, so DISH is driving that one. Then there's Accord by AT&T, Verizon, but also it's not only US based, so Jio and NTT Docomo is part of that consortium. And then there is was for test and measurement, so VIAVI also get the funding to establish. So there is really this kind of test centers which is supporting the ecosystem to start testing and make this interoperability testing, really to try to boost the deployments on the market. And now there is a second funding ongoing. So as I mentioned earlier, so this hardware development can be very, very expensive, and the innovation related to that, so it's even more, it's $400 million, which they are now sharing, and really try to push these radio units on the market and really for the mass production and make the innovations for these radio units. So in US there's a lot of funding, and it's very interesting, they are also funding the outside of US, so like in Philippines, so they are training the people, there's this Asian Open RAN Academy where they are supporting and also building the facilities over there. So of course in Europe, so like I-14Y Lab, so it's partially funded by the German, and then in UK we are having the Sonic Lab, which is originally funded by the Vodafone UK, Japan, I think, I don't know if they have get from the Orec Lab has got some funding as well. So, but now in US there's a big attention for this one.
Yeah. So Slavo, you wanted to talk about Sonic a bit more.
Well, we are part of Sonic efforts, and also we had the pleasure to be part of I-14Y activities. And I think that getting straight to the point, that these are really very useful and tremendous activities and undertakings. The reason is that they solve a sort of a chicken egg problem, because we do have a disruption on the market. Open RAN has been and still is a disruption. And the two sides of the, let's say, dealing table, the suppliers and the consumers, or the ones that use the technology, the operators and those that supply the technology, they are kind of looking and watching at each other, who is going to make the first step. Now, the government support helps a lot to kind of share the risks or lower the risks of those smaller players, because the older the players they are, I would say, the more affluent they are, so they are not that much risk scary. But the companies like mine, which right now has 50 people and it's very small, takes care of that risk. So if there is a governmental side that enters and somehow alleviates those risks, it is for the benefit not only of these dealing parties to solve the chicken egg problem, who moves first, but also for the overall good of the society there or the local country, because it enriches the local value chain of players, it gives more choice, it starts something. So I'm fan of those two that we have participated in. We are now making efforts to enter the US Orchid labs.
Yeah.
And technically, they are also great platforms to share knowledge, you know, debug stuff.
Yeah, indeed. You know, as you can easily see, the testing and interoperability testing and conformance testing, all those things are burning issues right now, have been burning issues and continue to be for the, you know, short-term future at least. And those things need to be solved. There is no doubt. So before I hand over to Gunnar, your opinion, I'd just like to mention that this British analyst company called Analyst Mason, they just conducted like very recently during the last couple of months a survey within service providers about adoption of open networks. I don't have the results here, and that would take a long time, but you know, it might be a good idea to Google that study. It's of course available free of charge. I can provide the links to the organizers if that's better way. But it has got a lot of good information and kind of mapping which geographies and are kind of ahead of this curve adopting open networks and which are kind of coming behind. Which is that happens all the time, but there are no surprises, on my opinion. Kind of usual suspects are, you know, leading this thing. So Gunnar, what would you like to see from the industry for you to adopt open network, starting from the core, as you said?
What I would like from industry. We are moving in a stream where with Nokia about 30 years more. Then now we are already 10 years, we are introducing Ericsson as well in our network. And we are moving in stream with them for the network development. And it's more or less understandable and convenient for us because they are more or less safe, more or less mature technique, more or less understandable, more or less secure, and more or less expensive, of course. And reason for us to develop open core or open RAN, and we are moving in open also directions. We have established special R&D group who are dealing with open technologies is, let's say, because our clients are asking for private networks and we are working very hard on and very serious on private networks. And when we met with our vendors, the problem that support for these small private networks are too expensive for our clients. And now we are starting also for our experience to develop private networks on open 5GS basis. As well, we are testing Druid. And what I can say is that we got a lot of help. We have contract with TNO, Dutch Institute, which are experienced and help us with architecture and advices for open, especially for open networks and open core solutions so far. So today we introduced private network based on Ericsson on one of cargo terminals in Freeport, and we made comparisons before they had Wi-Fi based on Wi-Fi 5, and we introduced two base stations and Ericsson core, and they special tablets for 5G and push-to-talk terminals, and they are very satisfied. We got very good results for coverage, and so now we are looking also for this. We are looking how to cover airports, Kaunas terminal port as well, and we are looking for solution what to do with this. And maybe open core solution will be just for them here. So let's see.
Okay, good, good.
But there is a real demand for...
Yes, yes, indeed.
On market.
So we could continue this deployment discussion, you know, quite a long time. Just to mention a few well-known, already implemented core network deployments are
know, Telefonica has been quite a front runner on this one, Orange as well, Verizon is in US, Vodafone, and many others. What is the real state of their deployment? You know, we don't know, but at least publicly they are doing this quite a bit. So let's start talking about technological complexities and how to fix those things. And to kick off this discussion, I made a copy from Deutsche Telekom O-RAN Town white paper. It's an Open RAN related, but it applies to core network equally. So I have a list which list is six topics, and it sounds really bad if we only talk about this. But these are the things we need to work on, and we will work on. Some are easier, some are not that easy. So high integration effort, you know, multi-vendor network, multi-vendor core network or radio network. It's a high integration effort. There has to be somebody taking over the system integration effort. Has to be somebody. It doesn't happen by itself. It just does not. Software stability in a case where you have, let's say, 10 different vendors putting their network functions on the same network. Performance, I'm going to come back to you, Alexi, that's your favorite topic. Coordination challenges between the vendors. And lifecycle management is one of my favorite topic, which is a big challenge. When you think about that, there can be 10, 15 vendors. How to lifecycle manage all these software components, have the same release cadence? How to do that? It's a huge problem. So, but luckily we have, of course, great companies to trying to solve these problems, and organizations like i14y Lab. We have O-RAN Alliance, Telecom Infra Project. We have many of these from the industry point of view, trying to solve these problems or challenges, which we will do, there is no doubt. And then we have commercial companies like testing companies to help in this space. So performance, Alexi, what would you say on performance?
Yeah, so first of all, if you think about the open networks and all the work that is kind of going into, for example, what i14y Lab is doing in the Open RAN space, is the conformance, compliance, interoperability testing. That is very important, but that doesn't guarantee yet scalable, performant, deployable solutions for operators. So we need to think as an industry, how do we enable these highly complex open networks? How do we test them and publish the results that they can be deployed? Otherwise, not every company has the resources to test everything by themselves, invest into the testing, keep doing that all the time. For example, as a core, we were discussing with one operator that was planning to deploy a open core. And they basically said that they can support one upgrade per year. One of the topics why everybody wanted to go into the open networks was to enable faster speed, faster innovation. But if you can only support from your processes and testing and integration perspective one release per year, that kills the whole idea of open networks and the innovation. That's when we come to the automation of the testing, which is becoming a very hot topic at the moment for telecom, both on the core side, as well as I think it's going to be a very, very big and important topic on the Open RAN side also. This testing has to be automated, covering everything from conformance to interoperability to performance and scalability to make sure that you can keep up with the rate of change and start pushing that innovation into these networks quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, indeed. And that, you know, once released per year, it's in big contradiction with for example, the Kubernetes container orchestration release schedule, which is four times a year. Yeah. And commercial companies which build container platforms, they push their new release four times a year.
I cannot imagine that telco operators would upgrade their network 4 times a year.
Yeah.
So there's a contradiction. People want to go to cloud nativeness, all the goodies of cloud nativeness, but there is this contradiction.
Yeah.
And there has to be a middle ground of somewhere. So Slavomir, you wanted to talk about phone reception going bad and data traffic not growing and all these things.
Yeah, I just wanted to point that lately you've seen this. It was last month, even shorter. This information that probably the demand for data stops rising, because so far it is like the telecom Moore's law. It was following the exponential rise. So suddenly there was an information that it may stop, that it stops rising. Of course, the results were gathered over an aggregated amount of traffic over a certain, was it city, as far as I remember? But immediately there were voices that maybe this is the end of the telecoms, because there is no more need for the capacity. Now I think that there is a big misunderstanding beneath, because one thing may be an amount of aggregated traffic, another thing is how this traffic is distributed over a physically realized network, like the RAN, radio access network, is. And here comes this point about poor reception. You can find articles in Time, and that's not very, I would say, technically oriented magazine, where people complain about poor connectivity in urban areas, cities like New York, where you of course have a coverage, but what you lack, obviously, is the capacity, because the number of people that shares the resources is so high in obviously certain periods of the day that the amount of data that's left for an individual is really very, very poor. And there are reports recently also indicating that we are all excited about the service availability, but when it comes to a certain overload situations, like evenings or, you know, that these busy hours are in different parts of the day, what has been seen, especially during COVID times, where so many people worked remotely, was that this network is really very poorly behaving. Now we need to have solutions for this. I mean, there is an ocean, there is really a huge road to take to solve this problem. And we shouldn't be blind by some aggregated measurements about the traffic changes. I think that this is the primary problem, by the way, of the mobile networks, which is the capacity, in the areas where it's difficult to build a new station. So some sort of new business models need to be brought to life in addition to what we know.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
And so on. So I think you mentioned this integration, system integration and interoperability and so on. So I think in the past, what I mentioned also earlier, so there was really, so there was lack of interest for the open, and which was meaning so that, for example, this O-RAN Alliance specification, so there was no contributors, and then there was also not, the operators were not interested for the standardization itself. What we can see then, the result was there, so that when there is, for example, radio manufacturers which are developing their own radio units, so they take the specification, read it, and then when some other vendor is taking, so they are reading different way. And then we try to make this interoperability testing and system integration, and simply doesn't work. So it's really taking normally still nowadays, so a couple of weeks when you get all these these parts up and running somehow, and then really to get this end-to-end performance. So that's the next step. But now it seems that there is also this O-RAN Alliance is gaining the momentum. So what we heard, so there is over 400 delegates now participating the meetings, and also ETSI specification. So the ETSI has been adopted the O-RAN Alliance specification and Korean TTA and so on. So
yeah, indeed. So one more question on this topic. Andreas, we know that I14Y Lab is doing, of course, interoperability testing, performance testing. You work on energy efficiency thing. Do you do anything on the helping the life cycle management issue, which is an issue between all the vendors? But do you have any stake on that?
Not yet.
Okay.
And the reason for that is so far we work, let's say, on the early pre-integration. So that means we, from the process perspective, we would hand over the solutions to our DT internal lab, and they would take care for the life cycle. But that is still traditional. So if we think about the life cycle you have explained, we must think, and we will work on questions how to update, for example, the certificates if new releases come, etc. And that is clearly something we must take care of. Okay. So that always the combinations are up to date.
Yeah.
So to that level, the I14Y would take care.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Economic benefits between open networks and traditional. So Slavomir, you mentioned that traditional vendors, we know who those guys are now looking for, you know, other businesses, you know, outside of telco networks.
Yeah, like
what does that mean?
Yeah, Nokia claimed that they are probably moved to focus on server business, not the server business, but the centralized cloud sort of business. Because the telecoms days are over.
Yes.
Well, I think that of course those days are not over. Simply, we cannot expect new results doing same things. There should be a change of a perception. And again, getting back to this comparison analogy with two sides of the negotiating table, those that use the technology, the operators, and those that provide the suppliers. We see the disaggregation on the side of the suppliers. But I would expect that there will be a disaggregation on the side of operators as well, because then we can have a sort of a balanced ecosystem. And this disaggregation on the side of operators may mean participation in the value chain of other players that may be better, with all respect, to provide certain elements of the value chain, like fiber, like sites, all this, like integrating stuff. But that needs a view which is kind of similar to unbundling of the local loop that happened years ago within the cable business. It's normal now. It was not normal before it has started.
Yeah.
And that may need some support or pressure from a regulator to push towards sharing. Because this idea, not ask for new resources, don't waste them, use what nature gives you in a plentiful manner.
Yeah, indeed. So on this topic, there was even an article just last week with the headline as, are Ericsson and Nokia competitors anymore?
Yeah.
And it is this topic.
Exactly.
It is this topic. And of course, it's... their model is changing big time. They are becoming more and more software vendors only. And traditionally, not downplaying anybody, but these incumbent equipment providers have not been great software companies, but if they want to play this game, they have to become software players. So that's one. Time is running fast. So let's talk about the latest trend. It's been there for a while, but not AI. I'm not going to talk about AI. So one of the latest trends, which is open network APIs, which is it's a latest addition to open network. So earlier we talked about the horizontal architecture and multi-vendor, which is all openness, obviously. But now open network APIs adds yet another dimension to the whole thing. And the idea is that there would be a standardized way for third-party software developers use these APIs to access, let's say, internals of the network to at least collect data, maybe even push data into the networks. There are security issues, there are many issues to solve, but I think that's a good thing to do. And even in the 5G standard, there is a functionality called Network Exposure Function, NEF, which is supposed to enable access to the network. It's a good start by 3GPP, the standardization authorization, but it's not enough. It's quite limited, but it's a good base. Then there are other exercises like GSMA has Open Gateway project, which is the same thing, adding to network function, network exposure function. And then the open source community is a project called Camara, which is another one. So there are few, and as always, there are maybe too many, but at least there are more than one. And there is always an alignment requirement between all these exercises. And most recent is this announcement of several service providers and Ericsson, where they form even a commercial company, 50% owned by Ericsson and 50% by several telcos, to build a kind of consistent set of APIs to access the networks. The company is not there yet. It's going to take a while to have the company up and running. And if that's successful, that would probably be a really good thing for the industry. And then there's a question in the air, how much or what can the hyperscalers do for network APIs? You know, Google, Amazon, and Microsoft, and IBM, and anybody, any of those. So that's a big issue, and a little bit of statistics, and this is from STL Partners, another UK-based company. They have been estimating that the value, total value of network API market will grow from 4 billion, which was last year. That's a big number already, but they say that it was 4 billion. It will grow to 34 billion by 2030, which is only 6 years ago, five years away. I don't know, hard to say if these will be the right numbers, but they're big numbers. So if these numbers are even close to the right level, there is a big monetization opportunity for many companies, probably telcos, vendors, software developers, and many companies to do. So anybody want to take their position on network APIs?
So maybe from my perspective, so I think you touched one important point is how to attract the software developers to leverage these APIs and create the use cases and applications that people are willing to pay for. And the other problem that also kind of plays into this is what you mentioned. There are already multiple different projects defining the APIs. So the software developers don't want to develop the integration for 10 different versions of the APIs depending in which country or region you are playing in. So as an industry, again, kind of we need to look how do we standardize the APIs and then try to attract. Most likely it might require some initial investment from the telecom operators themselves, demonstrating that the APIs can provide some good use cases. And then that as you demonstrate the commercialization and monetization of those APIs, that might then start attracting more developers into contributing into that. But I think those are the main two things that we need to figure out. How do we make the APIs attractive, and how do we standardize those in a way that you don't have to integrate with 10 different versions of the APIs if you want to develop something for that?
Yeah, again, if we don't have a consistent set of APIs, developers don't do that. And if we don't have developers, we have nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely right. And this is also a link to the question about economy you have asked.
Yes.
So this is all about market scale. So attracting the software developers means you reach the right market scale. And nobody would do a software development just for a tiny operator, let's say.
Yeah.
And there's another element. So it's also how the operators develop the business in future. So if you look at the B2B segment, so very often a service cannot build just by one operator. They need to work with other operators, access lines or whatever. So, and there we need also a lot of APIs at the network level, but also at the BSS level to have this transaction platforms and make sure that people can create the service and send the bills, etc.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to do. And
I know.
Again, we need a consolidation there.
Indeed.
And
we have one
point to that also that just came to my mind regarding the APIs is also how do we enable the developer community to again test the performance and scalability of the applications that they are developing in a secure way that don't break the networks when they need to test those. So there are multiple challenges, but I think it's an early stages for these APIs
indeed,
at the moment
indeed,
still.
Indeed. So we are up for time, so we probably would have time for a couple of questions.
Of course, yes we do. Please do raise your hand if you have any questions. We do have a microphone in the audience. While you're pondering on what is clear and what is not clear, we have a question in the platform which we can take. And Rashmi is asking, with 6G on the horizon, do you see open network efforts continuing into 6G? And how will these efforts change or not change to adapt to the new 6G waveform and other changes regarding 6G?
So
very broad question.
So I start, anybody can. So of course it will continue, and 6G will be, let's say, more open than 5G, there is no doubt. Even the standardization, 3GPP, although they did great job on standardizing the 5G core network with all the cloud nativeness and whatever you have, there was few things they realized were not done maybe right. So they are fixing those for 6G, and the openness in all levels is on top of their minds, no doubt, on
back
my opinion.
Back to the standardization. So also for this O-RAN Alliance Working Group, for example, or in general, so O-RAN Alliance, so they are having this next generation RAN working group as well. So and again, so they has been decided so that the 3GPP and O-RAN Alliance so will work together and try to find the consensus for this 6G architecture. So so they are somehow, in the beginning, they somehow go a little bit different path, but now they are coming back together and 6G will be open RAN based.
I think one important aspect is that from a technology and standards perspective, most likely 6G will be much more open and the trend will continue. But what we've seen with the 5G is even that there is capability and technology supports the openness. The adoption still is a lot of single vendor from an adoption perspective. So how do we enable and support the industry to actually take and utilize that openness moving forward more and more, and I think that's the key question.
Yes indeed.
And maybe Open RAN Alliance in this case will move towards 3GPP and will become standardization body as well,
which I think would be a good thing to do.
And that's very, very essential to get standards.
If I don't see any raised hands in the audience, we do have another question. How do you evaluate the AT&T deal of going Open RAN? Is it truly Open RAN or rather single vendor Open RAN?
So I know too much about it, so I'm not going to say anything. So anybody else?
Yeah, kind of from our perspective, again, looking into the one of the announcements from yesterday from Orange, Mass Orange in Spain, publishing they are going to deploy Open RAN ready 5G in Spain.
With Ericsson.
So how I feel is maybe the AT&T is a little bit similar, that it will be Open RAN ready rather than Open RAN per se. There might be some Open RAN elements in the future, but at the moment I see it's more like an Open RAN ready deployment.
But in AT&T case, it's publicly announced that they do have Fujitsu as a second radio unit vendor, which means that there is an open front haul component in parts of the deployments, at least. That's all public.
I think we have time for one quick question from the audience, rather from the platform. Layla is asking, what is the key driver that can lead to achieving of higher rates and speed over air for any next generation RAN comparable to speeds available at fiber? So she's comparing fiber to over air connectivity. What are the main driving forces behind that?
May I take it?
Yeah, please.
to me, the race is not about speed right now, because there is no point in beating fiber, to me. I mean, that's the nature of this medium. The game is about availability of good throughputs, and that is the capacity itself. And this is what's missing. That's terribly missing. And we don't need more bits per second per individual user that is the only one in the entire cell. And we were being kind of excited about such, you know, such measurements not that long time ago.
Yeah, I think the you cannot simply compare this technology. So it has different application areas. So if you look at the fiber deployment and how much traffic is transported there, so and if you also consider how much traffic is generated and consumed indoor, fiber and small radio systems, I'm neutral with respect to the technology, make a lot of sense, but for full mobility support, outdoor traffic, so it's clearly the macro base stations that you need, and that it will continue to evolve.
Indeed.
So,
all right. I think they do deserve your applause. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause to our amazing panel. Thank you for deep diving into this important topic.